welcome to Open Minds Radio with your host, Alejandra Rojas, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network. Alejandra has been a UFO paranormal researcher and journalist for nearly a decade and has logged hours in the field investigating the paranormal up close and personal. And now Open Minds Radio presents evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio, where we're bringing the UFO subject into the light of day. This is Alejandro Rojas, and we have another spectacular show today. In fact, we have brought on our very own Antonio Juneas as a guest today. The reason why is he's going to Mexico this weekend, and actually Jason, our news guy, and myself are going to be accompanying him for a conference. It's the 2012 UFO World Symposium. I think Antonio will be able to more accurately give us the title of the conference, but it's down in Mexico, done by Jaime Musan, and you're going to be able to watch this entire event at openminds.tv this weekend. If you go there, there's going to be streaming video. You're going to be able to watch Antonio and a number of other great speakers. I know Don Schmidt, who does Roswell investigation, is going to be down there. Whitley Strieber, of course, the famous and always entertaining Jaime Musan, and many others, and we'll talk about that some more in a minute. The reason I wanted to bring on Antonio is he is speaking at the conference about some of his stories that are also going to be in our magazine. And our magazine is coming out next week. It's actually out right now. You can go to our website and order it, but you're going to be able to go to Barnes & Noble and Borders and even the airport and purchase our magazine on the 23rd. So we are extremely excited about that. And in the first issue, Antonio has a great story on what is called the Ruwa incident. And essentially, a Harvard professor of psychology went down and investigated, his name was John Mack, a case in South Africa where some school children had actually seen a UFO land and these ET guys come out. Because, you know, the kids are going crazy, the teachers are thinking they're being silly, but upon investigation, it was something that really happened. These kids were startled, and they described similar occurrences. So, and it's an incredible case. And so we covered a story on that Antonio will tell us about. He also, for the second issue of the magazine, which we're working on now, has a story on the Vatican and their connections. You know, you've heard us talking a lot about astrobiology and the Vatican talking about extraterrestrials and the philosophical implications and what does that mean. So he's got a story on that we'll be talking about. Also, Mexico. Mexico's first UFO wave. Antonio believes that perhaps their first UFO wave happened during the time of Montezuma, the Aztec culture, that they might have seen some omens, or they did see some omens that were documented, and maybe those were UFOs, and we're going to talk more about that. So a lot of cool stuff to talk about, but as usual, we have our UFOs in the news, headlines that we cover on a regular basis that you can see on the front page of openminds.tv, and we have our news correspondent, Jason McClelland, here to tell us all about it.
Good afternoon, Alejandro. Hello, Phoenix, and hello, world. Let's review the news from the week. I delivered a story last week about a multi-day UFO sighting in Euclid, Ohio. This series of UFO sightings was again reported by Cleveland's Fox Channel 8, MSNBC, and other major media, because the mysterious lights continued to appear night after night. Eugene Ehrlich, a local resident, spotted and photographed lights in the sky outside his house over a span of many nights. He described the lights as pulsating and changing colors. A field investigator from MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, went to Euclid and investigated the strange lights. And their investigator was there for multiple days and photographed and video and took video of the object. But still, no one knows what the object was. And I think it appeared for something like 9 nights in a row.
Well, I heard that. I saw a story today, and I'll get that up, that it's day 11, that he might have even continued to see the sightings up until even today.
And I believe somebody spoke with NASA, and NASA said they were testing some sort of aircraft in the area. I didn't know NASA tested aircraft. But they admitted that in the area they had tested things, but not on any of these nights that the lights were reported.
Interesting. I know if you live out in Ohio, if you're a listener, you know, give us a call, let us know, or go to our website and send us an email on if you're seeing these things. A lot of people live around Lake Erie.
Right. In other news, more than 100 starlings fell out of the sky in England last week. A witness described the birds falling from the sky like rain. Approximately 70 appeared to be dead before hitting the earth. The Royal Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals was unable to determine the cause of death, but noted that the birds were not poisoned, but did sustain physical injuries. One possible explanation is that the birds were hit by something they couldn't see, like possibly an invisible UFO.
Ooh, that's freaky. Yeah, that's weird. These birds falling out of the sky. Such a strange story. And it's happened before, actually, in the past, but so strange. And you said that they ruled out poison?
Right.
So
because that's one
heck?
Of the things, sometimes when these birds are in the sky, if there's some sort of
gas
poisonous gas in the air, but 100 birds at one time just falling to their death.
Yeah, really strange. Of course, when this happens, too, people speculate that it's heart, maybe some sort of weird experiments done with microwaves.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
And in Open Minds news, we are pleased to announce live streaming coverage of the Cumbre Mundial OVNI conference at the World Trade Center in Mexico City beginning today. You can view the conference from the comfort of your own home for only $29.95. The event runs from today, March 19th, through the 21st, and features 18 international speakers presenting a variety of UFO topics over the course of 3 days. Speakers include Jaime Musan, Nick Pope, Whitley Strieber, Haktan Octagon, and Open Mind's very own Antonia Huneas. Again, you can watch the entire conference online all 3 days for only $29.95. Just go to openminds.tv and click on the events tab to purchase your ticket and for more information about the conference. That's it for me, Alejandro. Back to you.
Cumbre Mundial. You do that very well. You can rule your R's. I can't do that.
Gracias.
Hey, pretty good. I like it when the girls do that, Alejandro, but I can't roll my eyes. I can't do it, unfortunately. But, yeah, it should be a fun weekend out there in Mexico. We're going to be able to get some more photos of some of the different archaeological things around there. So that'll be really good because we'll get those pictures for our story that Antonio is doing. So we'll talk more about that story. It's an exciting one. In just a minute, some other things with our magazine to let you know. There's also other writers in there like me. So just to entice you to get out there, tell your buddies, take your friends, everybody, go store by store and buy up all of the magazines. But we have one on the White House connection to UFOs, and it's really interesting because there are staff members in the White House, including Hillary Clinton and John Podesta, who's not really in the White House anymore, but he helped with the transition period. But some their connections to UFOs and the efforts for disclosure. Also, a story on cattle mutilations in the second one, and that's a lot of fun. We had Chuck Zukowski on the show before. We also had him on our live streaming of the Laughlin Conference, where he was able to talk about that, and we'll get more details coming up here. But speaking of that as well, the streaming that we did in Laughlin at the UFO Congress, that's going to be online as well because every day we streamed, we did a live show with some interviews with some of the speakers there and some of the people around. So you're going to be able to see that online as well. And we got some great interviews out there. It was a lot of fun. And the reason why speaking about Chuck brought that up is because that was party night. You know, you can see the party happening behind us. And during my interview with Chuck, he got really silly and was being a goofball. And some people were saying, hey, you guys need to be more serious. But, you know, we can't be serious all the time. We kind of have some fun, people. So that was a lot of fun. That was a really good interview. So don't forget, go and check out our magazine. Really, it's only $30 for 6 issues. So for a year's worth of magazine, and the stories are just phenomenal. They're really actually selling very well. We sold tons of subscriptions out there in Laughlin, so we're really excited about it. And, of course, we're extremely excited about the second issue. So we'll get more into what's in that second issue, more details on the Ruwa story, the Vatican, Aztec omens, and UFOs. What's more exciting than that? In just a few seconds after the break, you're listening to Open Minds Radio on KFNX.
Listening to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100.
Welcome back. You are listening to Open Minds Radio with your host, Alejandro Rojas, and we have our special guest for the day, Antonio Junias, with us in the studio, which is exciting to have a guest actually here with us. Antonio, why don't we start off with you giving a little bit about your background?
Hi, Alejandro, and hi, everybody.
Hi.
Well, my background, you know, I've been in the UFO field for over 30 years. I'm a science journalist. My family originally is from Chile, but I lived over 30 years in the United States. I lived for a long time in New York City, and where I became an ufologist. I've written for publications all over the world, and now for the last 6 months, I was lucky enough to be hired by Open Minds, and I moved to the West.
Being in New York, one of the exciting stories is you got to be involved with some of the different activities the UN had related to UFOs.
Yeah, that was great. You know, I arrived in New York within a year or so, and I had written maybe one article on UFOs. I was still writing for some newspapers in Santiago, Chile. And I heard through the, well, I got a report through the news wires, I guess, that there was going to be this official UFO hearing at the United Nations, which was convened by the then Prime Minister of Grenada, a Caribbean island called Sir Eric Gehry. And so I went, covered it as a journalist, and that was the very first UFO event I ever attended. And and it was the only official UFO event that ever happened at the United Nations. There were some other lectures that people did, including myself, many years later. But these lectures were for, you know, for the employees, for the staff. They were not official. They were not part of the agenda of the United Nations. So
that was your first UFO meeting. Was
yeah? Well, I didn't speak, of course.
UN,
I was totally unknown in the field.
That's
pretty
incredible.
I got to meet Dr. Alan Hynek, you know, the late astronomer who was the advisor for Project Blue Book, and Jacques Vallée, the famous also astrophysicist, French American, lives in California now.
Those two people were instrumental in what the movie Close Encounters was based off of.
Correct.
Jacques Vallée was the French guy in the movie.
Hynek was the advisor, as you know, and has a cameo appearance. And Vallée was really the inspiration for the character of Lacombe, played by the famous movie director Truffaut. So anyway, it was very exciting to cover that. And, of course, I was a science journalist, so I had been naturally skeptic about the UFO phenomenon, like most people are, especially back in those days. You thought that if it's not being covered by official institutions or scientific academies and things like that, it's probably not worthwhile. But this convinced me otherwise. I mean, here was an official hearing at the United Nations. And so that was great. Yeah, that was. And then, of course, I was able to meet many. There was an interesting UFO community back in New York City back in those days. Well, there was the late Hungarian colonel, very colorful character, Kolman von Kavinsky. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he had worked at the United Nations, and he had tried to get a project started under the Secretary General Jutant. And then, of course, I also met over the years Bud Hopkins, you know, the abduction author and artist, and John Keel, the author of the Mothman Prophecies, who passed away
last
year.
Well, getting into the story we wanted to talk about that you wrote for the first magazine, when did you first meet the Harvard professor John Mack, who investigated that case?
Probably I met John Mack.
He lived in New York.
He lived in Boston.
Oh, okay.
Actually, Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Okay.
He was a professor of psychiatry at Harvard University.
Right.
Very prominent man. He was a Pulitzer Prize winner for a biography he wrote of Lawrence of Arabia.
Right.
So this was not your run-of-the-mill ufologist.
Mm-hmm.
And he had become interested in the phenomenon through Bud Hopkins. Originally, he went there, I guess, as a psychiatrist, you know, probably.
And he was more focused on the phenomena of abduction.
Yes, he mm-hmm. was. He was not a UFO investigator. He was, because of his profession, his emphasis was on the abductions. Initially, he got very great. The media was very encouraging, you know, and they had great profiles of him and the Wall Street Journal and all kinds of publications, because I think that the mainstream media thought that finally we have a prominent scientist who's going to come up with a, quote, psychological explanation for this, basically going to debunk this phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Then when his book came out, which I believe was in 1994, his first book, it was just called Abduction. He disappointed, you know, all the skeptics, because he said, well, I'm sorry, but this is real. I've looked deeply into it. There's no psychological explanation. There's no these experiences cannot be accounted by psychiatric illnesses or whatever. And I guess it was around this period. His book had been, I probably met him around the same time, maybe 93 or something. He used to go to a lot of conferences because mm-hmm. he was a very prominent man. And so I was also lecturing at a lot of international and American conferences. So I met him around that period. And he got a tip, I guess, that this very interesting case had happened in, was not in South Africa, but in Zimbabwe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, at a place called Ruwa, not far from Harare, the capital of Zimbabwe, at a elementary school called the Ariel School. In fact, the case was investigated by the late Cynthia Hind, whom I also met. She was a delightful lady. I met her at a conference in Rio de Janeiro many, many years ago, and she used to come to the United States once in a while. And
so was she an investigator in Africa?
She was the pioneer investigator in Africa.
Okay.
Yes, she was not black. She was white from the old, I guess, British people that had lived in Zimbabwe, which used to be called Rhodesia. But she was an African, and she was really the first, a pioneering person. And she was a UFO investigator, and so she lived near the area. She got the tip that this case had happened, and she was the first on the scene. And basically what you had was, this happened on September 14, 1994, and the kids were, it is estimated that about 62 kids saw it.
Wow.
And they were on a break. And this UFO literally landed or hovered outside a playfield, and they all saw it. And not only they saw the UFO land, but these beings come out, and some of the kids had some kind of communication as well. And they were all consistent. Initially, the teachers and other people tried to put it down, but the stories were so consistent that basically, you know, eventually they accepted the kids' testimony. Now, John Mack got there maybe about 4 months afterwards, and he brought a camera woman from South Africa, and he recorded extensively a lot of interviews with the kids. Then basically, well, unfortunately, John Mack was killed by a drunk driver in England while attending a conference on Lawrence of Arabia. This happened, I forgot, around 2004 or something like that.
Right.
So the case, basically, Cynthia Hine had also passed away. So the case lay dormant. And then that's when a filmmaker from both New York and Boston called Randy Nickerson, initially he was brought in by the John Mack Institute. Now it's called the John Mack Institute. It used to be called the Peer Group. And to edit possibly the footage that they had and do a documentary. And this filmmaker, Nickerson, realized that the case was so significant and interesting and unusual that it really it merited a more detailed investigation.
It's an incredible case, and you can see some of the video I know on YouTube. It's been on some. Was it covered on Sightings or it
yes.
was one of those?
There
TV
was
shows.
Sightings that covered it. It mm-hmm. was on the BBC even at the time.
Okay.
It got a lot of coverage, but that was all back then.
Right.
And so what this guy has done is he went back. He actually spent something like 9.5 months in Southern Africa, most of the time in South Africa, a little time in Zimbabwe. What happened, of course, the kids are all now in their 20s. And because the economic and political situation in Zimbabwe is so unstable and bad, you know, Zimbabwe mm-hmm. really has a lot of problems, that a lot of them have emigrated to South Africa. So he did a lot of radio shows, and he was able to eventually locate about 30 of the original witnesses and then interview them. He also found other things, that there were many other incidents that happened over perhaps 3 or 5 day period.
In Africa?
Specifically Zimbabwe.
Really?
Including 2 other schools. So apparently this object first hovered over those other schools and then finally landed in the Ariel school.
Interesting.
And he also found, that this is fascinating, that the principal of the Ariel school had a missing time experience.
Wow. Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, but we'll be getting into Mexico and the Vatican and UFOs. We're with our guest Antonio Junez. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Open Minds Radio on KFNX.
This is Open Minds Radio. Here again, your host, UFO paranormal researcher and journalist, Alejandro Rojas.
Welcome back. I want to remind you that at Open Minds, we are always posting those news stories at openminds.tv, so you can get those on a daily basis, as well as other stories, including stories by our guest, Antonio. In fact, we had an interview with Antonio with Bob Friend, who was one of the gentlemen who ran Project Blue Book for the Air Force for a period of time. That was a very lengthy and interesting interview because you don't see very many interviews with Bob Friend out there. So you got some details from him that people haven't been able to see other places. Real quick, because we don't want to give away your whole story from Africa.
Right.
So we want them to go read it on the magazine. But if you could share, before the break, you were talking about some of the other phenomena that even another landing at a school.
Well, no. Basically, I think the landing was just the one in Ariel School. But okay. There was a wave, is what we call in ufology, okay. A wave. And probably it's estimated that thousands of people saw it. So there were also adults involved, as now we know, including the principal of the school. This maybe didn't even happen exactly on that same morning, but perhaps within those few days. She had been in denial, of course, so she hadn't even talked about it until this guy, Randy Nickerson, went there. So we don't know exactly the date, but it's definitely in that period. And another interesting aspect is, of course, people, you know, skeptics will say, well, but all this material now is available on the web and so on. Yeah, maybe so today, but not in 1994
mm-hmm.
and not especially in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is a very poor country. I'm sure it wasn't at all wired for the worldwide. Even the web in 1994 was fairly primitive, even in the United States.
Right.
So and there would have not been large amounts of UFO books and periodicals and things like
right.
that. So the chances of 10-year-old kids, you know, reading about how aliens are supposed to look or behave, it's nil, I would
right.
say. So I'm very excited, not
yeah.
only with this story, but in general with our magazine. I think it looks fantastic.
Have you heard an update when this documentary might be coming out?
Well, when I interviewed Nickerson, which was a few months ago when we were putting together the first issue, he was still working. I guess most of the filming was done, but he was still editing and trying to obtain additional footage.
Gotcha.
He was talking of by the mid of 2010.
Okay.
These things tend to be delayed, so
yeah.
We'll have to contact him. We'll have to send him, in fact, a copy of the magazine, and
yeah.
I'm sure he'll be delighted.
That's exciting. I'm real excited about the documentary, because like I said, it was featured in parts and pieces of documentaries.
Yeah.
Right, but only
mm-hmm.
briefly, and it certainly deserves an entire documentary focused
yeah.
on it.
It's a really unusual case.
Mm-hmm. Another kind of interesting development in ufology that deserves a lot of attention is the Vatican and its sudden interest in astrobiology.
Right.
Or is this interest so sudden?
Well, actually, it is not that sudden. If we consider that in 2007, I believe, so it's over 2 years ago, the Osservatorio Romano, which is the absolute official voice of the Vatican, this is not just a regular Rome newspaper, this is the official newspaper of the Catholic Church for the whole world, published a famous interview with a then new director of the Vatican Observatory, an Argentinian Jesuit called Funes, Father Funes, and the title of the interview was very suggestive. And this obviously, you know, as you know from our even our magazine, the headlines are not done cavalierly, you know,
right.
Editors, you know, carefully.
Yeah, but take us
that.
A long time, we argue, and we...
So the headline was, "The Extraterrestrial is My Brother."
Mm-hmm.
That was the headline of that article, and which was basically an interview with Father Funes. And this was over 2 years ago. And this received worldwide attention at the time. And then later, there was even a second interview with Funes. And so this has been going on for at least 2 years.
And his message essentially being... I don't think they're here, but if they were, it's not that big of a deal. It's okay to believe in ETs.
Correct. That, yeah. Ultimately, I mean, what's interesting is the church is dealing with this issue, at least at this time, not so much from a theological point of view, but from a scientific point of view.
Mm-hmm.
They have they're handling it through the observatory, which is their scientific branch. You know, the Vatican even has an Academy of Sciences and everything, and it's run by real scientists. And same thing with the observatory. It happens that often these scientists are also priests, especially Jesuits who tend to have a very good education.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, they're not talking directly about UFOs, but they're kind of, in a way, I guess, preparing public opinion and Catholic opinion
right.
that it's okay, you know, that there is life out there.
Right. And then recently they had an entire conference devoted to it.
Correct. So this has been kind of creating a momentum, and the momentum reached a kind of a peak in, I believe it was either in last November or December. In fact, we do have a short news article on the first issue, but we'll have a thorough treatment on the second issue, including an article by Daniel Sheehan, who's an attorney. In fact, interesting enough, he used to be John Mack's attorney. Because he's
also
a Harvard professor.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and he's connected. He also did work with the Jesuits, so he has very good connections with the Jesuits. So we have an article by him, an article by me. We'll have a whole dossier. And, yeah, so there was a conference. It was a strictly scientific conference run by the Vatican Observatory in the Vatican itself. And this got, again, worldwide attention. One of the... most famous personalities was, and in fact, you did the story where his book got mentioned. That was about something different, you know, the Hillary Clinton, Paul Davis. Paul Davis was one of the most famous scientists there.
You know, I don't know about you, and I know the synchronicities, I think, are pretty incredible. It's just kind of strange that, you know, this discovery around the book that Hillary Clinton was holding just happened at the same period of time that Paul Davies is getting in the news like crazy. First
yeah.
of all, for his ideas on astrobiology, then for speaking at the Vatican's conference. And even now, he's been in the news a lot. He's got a new book coming
right.
out talking about his ideas about extraterrestrial life and extraterrestrial life possibly even being here as far as microbes that enter our atmosphere possibly on a regular basis through meteors or other reasons.
Right. Hopefully he will be even in Open Minds Radio one of these days, right?
Well, they said they were going to be on the show, so
yeah.
I got to follow up on that, and hopefully we'll have them in the next couple of weeks here.
So I guess, you know, basically the idea of life, extraterrestrial life, is that is already being dealt. not just by the Vatican, but by even by other institutions. It seems to be safe for people to be talking about bacteria or something, you know.
Right.
Oh, yeah, there's life out there somewhere in the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a start, you know. I mean, of course, the next step is, well, life is not just there as a bacteria, but it's coming here
possibly
and
it's being
reported here perhaps for hundreds of years.
But even before Funa said anything, I think one of the things that you'll have in your article is a couple of Monsignors who had talked about this before.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that the Monsignors who talked before, we're talking of another Jesuit, Father Grasso, Domenico Grasso, and he was operating in the 60s and 70s. And later, of course, Monsignor Balducci, Corrado Balducci, who was the chief exorcist for the Vatican. And I knew him personally, actually. I met him a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
A delightful man.
Him.
Yeah, yeah. We had a bottle of wine one time. The difference, though, between Balducci and Funes is that Balducci was never had a headline or an interview in the Vatican Observer.
Mm-hmm.
So he was doing it on his own,
right,
probably with the acquiescence of the Vatican, obviously,
right,
because he was appearing all over Italian media, but never like officially in the Vatican Observatory.
Right.
So that's another step. But these guys...
That'll be a great article. But sorry, I got to cut you off right here because we got to take another break. But when we come back, we'll let you finish your idea if you remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get into the Aztec and their omens. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Open Minds Radio on KFNX.
Back to Open Minds Radio. Here now, former official spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, your host of Open Minds Radio, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome back to Open Minds Radio. This is your host, Alejandro Rojas, and we have Antonio Junez, one of the premier speakers at the Mundial Cumbre, I can't say it. Sorry.
Cumbre Mundial.
OVNI. The 2020 OVNI being their word for UFO.
OVNI is the acronym in all Latin languages for UFO.
What does it stand for exactly, the OVNI?
It's the same. Objeto volador no identificado. The only thing is unidentified, you have to put it in two
non-identificado
words.
Non-identificado. Yeah. Okay,
so it's just a translation of the acronym UFO.
But this is a special conference, what we're talking about here, that's going on right now. So at openminds.tv right now, you can watch the streaming of this conference that's happening. So it's going to be a lot of fun. You can check that out for, I think it's like $30. It's dirt cheap, people, to go on there and order and watch
and
it.
And really, you have some of the main speakers in the world, you know, and from multiple continents and many, many countries.
Well, now that we're talking about Mexico, one of the stories that you have in the second magazine is Mexico's first UFO wave and possibly, I guess, Mexico's biggest official at the time, Montezuma, seeing a UFO.
Yeah, that's a fascinating story. I had done some a research project many years ago on historical UFOs, you know, the types of figures that appear in paintings and things like that. And I had a grant to do that, and it was in the process of that project that I discovered, really, that if you start reading all the chronicles of the Spanish conquest, you read it consistently in book after book, and I'm talking not just the modern books, but the actual books written in the 16th century by the Spanish missionaries and some of their own conquistadors. And they all talk that for a period of perhaps even as much as 10 years before the arrival of the Spaniards, which was in 1519, Hernán Cortés, there were widespread weird phenomena, celestial omens, and other strange stuff all over Mexico, all over the Aztec Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And this created a climate, a psychological climate, which was linked to prophecies about the return of Quetzalcoatl, you know, the famous was both a god but also a legendary historical figure, a king of the Toltecs from the 10th century, who supposedly had prophesied that he was going to come back. And this worked to the advantage of the Spaniards, of course, and they used it quite cleverly to their advantage and, you know, and accomplished the conquest. And this seems to have obsessed the Aztec emperor, Montezuma.
And he was terrified.
Yes, he was absolutely terrified. He himself saw this, some call it a comet or whatever it was. It was certainly a celestial object. It was seen consistently. But it probably was a comet. But if you read also the different accounts, it looks like different authors mentioned different years and different behaviors. So not all was, I don't think everything can be explained just by that single comet. There was a multiplicity of sightings, as well as other phenomena. You know, when you guys were discussing the case of the birds, that mm-hmm. killed the 100 birds that that dropped
fell out of the sky.
That's the kind of stuff that you find in these chronicles. Not exactly that, but you know, that kind of weird omens.
Well, speaking of weird birds, the thing that you have in the story about this bird,
the mechanical
that
bird,
had some sort of jewel or mirror in its face.
Yes. So according to the story, there's some fishermen in the Lake Tenochtitlan, because at that time Tenochtitlan, which is now Mexico City, you know, was Venice. It was actually a lake city. It was canals and everything. And they found this, what they describe as a bird, except that it wasn't a normal bird. Instead of a head, it had a round mirror. And they take it to Montezuma, and Montezuma looks at the mirror and sees stars. And then he sees an approaching army. And the way one of the Nahuatl texts, Nahuatl, you know, being the language spoken in central Mexico at the time, is neat. Because, of course, the Indians didn't know horses. There were no horses in America, you know. Came with the Europeans. And originally, this used to terrify the Indians when they saw these armored guys on horses, you know. In the Nahuatl text, they describe them as men riding on the back of deer. Because I guess that was the closest they could.
These giant beasts.
Right. So, anyway, and then he calls again his astrologers and soothsayers and prognosticators. You know, this is the way they mentioned them. In other words, they would be their chief scientific advisors, you know.
Right.
And they come, and by the time they're going to see on the mirror, the bird takes off.
Hmm.
So I don't know what to make of it. You can interpret it. Of course, some people will dismiss it as a, you know, as just a fable, a legend. Other people will say, well, you could give it a UFO interpretation, that it was some kind of device, a mechanical device, and that it had some projections that Montezuma could see, and then once that message was conveyed, the thing took off. And then we even have what could be described as an abduction case of a peasant, a poor farmer, that, and I won't tell the whole story so that people can eventually read it, but this guy is basically abducted by, quote, a talking eagle. So, again, this is not a normal bird, you know. It's a bird that takes him to a cave and then talks to him.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know from some of the abduction accounts, in what psychologists and people like Mac call screen memories, sometimes people have these experiences with what they think are owls or raccoons or something like that.
Like in the like forest kind, they use the owl thing.
Yeah, the owl, and other people have talked about raccoons.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe even deer had been mentioned.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of. You know, people remembering their bed being surrounded by deer.
Correct. So in this case, it's an eagle, which it would be consistent with Aztec, you know, lore.
Well, and being a scientific advisor to Montezuma was not necessarily something that something that would end in anything positive, possibly.
No, some of these guys had a sad ending. Let's
so, and essentially, because I remember, this is because it's a funny part. He was asking his advisors and the astrologers, did you see that comet? And if they said no, they were in deep trouble.
They were in deep trouble. They went to prison. Some were even executed. And what's interesting is this appears in all the chronicles. I mean, not every single story. You know, that's why you eventually have to read a lot. I spent a lot of time researching this story. But in some of these chronicles are very famous, and like especially the book by Sahagún, Bernardino de Sahagún, who was a Franciscan friar. He's been called the father of Mesoamerican anthropology. If he had lived in modern times, he would have been a scientist, not a priest, because he recorded every single aspect of the
right.
Aztec culture, everything, their food, their medicines, their mythology, their history, their flora and fauna, beliefs, how they bury the dead, every single aspect, methodically. And he had a pool, he knew the Nahuatl language perfectly, and he had a pool of Nahuatl informers. And these people would, basically, the original book was not even written in Spanish, was written in Nahuatl language,
wow.
and then summarized by Sahagún himself into Spanish. And he has a couple of chapters about the omens. And then the other one, which is, I think, the parts that you read, is was written by a Dominican friar called Diego Duran.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that really goes into a deep psychological profile of Montezuma and how he was... Well, I mean, the guy was getting all these omens or whatever, but some of them also came in the form of dreams, or people were telling him basically that, I mean, he was the most powerful man, you know, in the land, and that basically it was all going to end. So he wasn't a happy man.
Yeah, he was freaking out, and the prophecy came true.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing.
Him.
People may want to dismiss this thing as superstitious. In some of the current books, you know, by modern historians, they just dismiss. Oh, it was just meteorological, astronomical phenomena, and the Aztec were superstitious people. Well, maybe so, but the omens were really turned out to be true. Also, what's interesting when you're dealing with historical, possible historical UFO waves, is yes, you can still have to deal with natural phenomena, but certainly you did not have any kind of balloons or secret military aircraft or airplanes.
They can't blame
or
those
helicopters.
On weather balloons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or missiles.
Or stealth airplanes or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you have to basically reduce it to both either meteorological or astronomical phenomena.
Yeah. So out of the other articles that we're getting from people, we're going to have another Obama one from Grant and Angela.
Right.
Is there any other aspect that I'm forgetting in the maybe either magazine you wanted to point out?
Well, I think that what we're trying to do is have a variety of subjects. So in every issue, we have like a pilot case. Of course, in the current issue, you know, we have the interview with Major Torres, which was done by...
Right, the cover story.
Right, that's the cover story. And he was an American Air Force pilot who was told a long time ago
to shoot them down,
you know. And so that's our current story. But in the next issue, we'll have a story by a famous case from France, by an Air France airline pilot. And of course, in every story, in every issue, we have a major abduction case. In the current one, we have a very interesting case of an implant removal.
Right. So that's another interesting one. So it's a great magazine. Everybody check it out. We are out of time for this show. Thanks for being on the show, Antonio.
You're welcome.
Always man. A lot of very interesting stuff. Be sure to join us next week, and be sure to go to openminds.tv and order the magazine. Thanks for listening to Open Minds Radio, where we're bringing the UFO subject into the light of day. See you next week.
The pressure of the morning, I keep forgetting. I smell the warm summer air. Nothing. You watch your feet, the cracks in the past.